these guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are, high atop the Chicago River. Steve Bertrand on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for joining us, and welcome to Tuesday afternoon. We're going to go out west a little bit later in the program to the Melrose Trading Park, post, I should say, in L.A., where an ice cream salesman is now charging social media influencers double for his ice cream. He was tired of being hit up for free ice cream in exchange for positive reviews online. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Also, a can of wine for this lunch coming up later in the broadcast. But we start on Wall Street. John Najarian is here from CNBC, joins us on Tuesday afternoons to sort of get a pulse of what's going on. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
So I'm looking at the indices today. The Dow has pretty much been stuck at down about 87, 88 points for the past few hours. NASDAQ actually positive, but from what I read from the experts, everyone is looking to Capitol Hill to see what Fed Chairman Jerome Powell has to say. A couple of days of hearings, right? But beginning tomorrow.
Exactly. His hearings, basically will, I guess, kind of lay out exactly how much and how aggressive the Fed may be with rate cuts, because everybody's looking for rate cuts right now, Stephen. And it's a question of, is he saying that they're really necessary? And if so, for what reason? That's what a lot of people on Wall Street are waiting to hear, and certainly a lot of speculation that those rate cuts could be as much as 50 basis points. And those kind of pie-in-the-sky thoughts have been sort of messed with over the last 24 hours or 48 hours.
Well, right, with the big jobs
report, likely.
Right, the big jobs report that came out last week sort of dashed tossed a little cold water on the idea of a 50-point rate cut, or is there still a possibility of it?
Still a possibility, because once they get down as cheap as they are, the interest rates that the Fed is offering, generally they have had to do something else, like QE, quantitative mm-hmm. easing, not just taking rates down, but buying back various bonds very, very aggressively. And will that happen again? If it does, a lot of people believe that the Fed would react aggressively, and by that they meant 50 basis points, just to kind of do a shock and awe for the markets. But I don't think it'll be necessary. I think they'll be able to get away with a 25 basis point cut July 31st, and that's still what I've been looking for the last basically 3 months.
Well, there was a job report that was a monster report that came out Friday. Today, the government reports on job openings, and they actually dropped a little bit in the month of May, but still close to the record, I guess. So we expect the job market to continue as hot as it is.
Yes, we do. And that's good news for people looking either to move or seeking their first job. That's good news. And I think overall, the Fed isn't in any desperate straits to make a cut so aggressively as that 50 basis point cut. But nonetheless, I think they are going to make a cut in July, basically just taking back what they put on the table in December.
We're in the early stages of the second quarter earnings reporting season, PepsiCo today, and the CEO saying he sees no sign of any sort of consumer showdown or slowdown, I should say, which is another good sign of things to come.
Yep, and I would agree, even though, of course, some of the drinks that they provide are not as robust in the sales side. Certainly their snack side of their business is killing it. And salty snacks, as much as people want to demonize salty snacks, we just can't get enough
right,
of them.
Right.
And obviously the addictive quality of those is something that plays right into PepsiCo's strength.
What are we expecting for the earnings seasons coming up? Because the reports I read is that they look like they will not be as strong as they were year to year.
Right. And a lot of that's because of the absolute strength that we gained from the tax cuts and so forth. In particular, of course, we're talking corporate tax cuts that were so dramatic compared to relatively minor cuts to individual tax rates. So that's a tough comparison. But on the other hand, I think they will be good earnings nonetheless. And right. I think, you know, that's one of the things, Stephen, that we'll end up having to focus on is, okay, they're not as, the growth isn't as fast as it was last year, but the growth is still very nice.
We're still moving and forward.
Exactly right.
You know, so I mentioned the Dow was down. The NASDAQ is up. I love this. The NASDAQ is being driven, perhaps today, by Netflix, which is being driven by Stranger Things. The success of the third season of Stranger Things boosting Netflix today, and that's lifting the NASDAQ into positive territory.
Right. I mean, it was one of the things that people spoke of a lot when they talk about content and how much content really is king is, well, Ken Bezos and Ken Jeff over at Netflix produce the sorts of contents for Amazon and Netflix that of the sort that consumers want to watch and that, you know, basically a mass market will pay for on a monthly basis. And the answer is yes,
yeah,
they will.
They are
and
doing it.
So both have had huge successes with a lot of their show offerings. And I think to the extent that that continues, those are two of my favorite plays.
I'm going to start watching Dead to Me tonight, I think. I keep hearing about that on Netflix. All right, what are you watching today?
Well, today we've been trading still a lot of Ameren. This is a stock along with Kratos. These are stocks that have been on our screens for a while. We've been trading them aggressively. And knock on wood, those companies have continued to outperform. So love the space. Ameren is in the biotech space. And I think that's a sweet spot right now.
John,
and they're certainly doing a great job.
John,
yes,
it's great to talk to you again. I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank, and we thank you for tuning in. You know, one of the things, I haven't really made the jump yet, but my wife has. She will drink wine out of a can. It's a booming business. Some of the numbers in 2012, I think it was a $2 million industry. It's about a $28 million industry today. And a winery from Southwest Michigan is jumping into the barrel of wine, if you will. Matt Morse is on the phone line, the CEO of Morse Hospitality Group, which is the owner of the Round Barn Winery. Matt, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Hi, thank you.
All right, so let's start with geography. You guys are in extreme southern Michigan, right, or almost northern Indiana. Where are you?
Yeah, we're about an hour and 40 minutes from Chicago, just across the border, about 10 miles.
I used to have a house in Saugatuck, so when I was driving up there on the weekends, I'd drive by signs for you, right? Billboards, not too far at all.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
All right, so you've been in business for 25 years or so now. You're jumping jumping into this canned wine industry. Now, I was reading in your press release that you say you're the first craft winery to do so. Is that correct?
Well, we're one of the first.
Okay.
We're not the first for sure, but as far as the lower ABV and having, you know, kind of chasing that Truly and White
Claw, right.
ours is one of the first craft versions out there. A lot of the other wineries that are canning are just canning their still wine in a can, their normal products. And this is a whole new lineup that we've come out with that's a little bit lower ABV. So, you know, you can have one or two by the pool and not be passed out.
That's interesting because the whole, that Truly area and the hard cider, that's just a booming part of the alcohol sector. And you guys have not been for sale in retail any of your products before, correct?
No, we've sold bottles of wine in retail, of course.
Oh,
but
you have?
This is the sparkling beverage in a can is brand new to us. We actually received a grant from the state of Michigan this last year to help procure the line and plant some more vineyard acreage to further Michigan's growth and wine industry. So we're very happy to get that from the Michigan Department of Ag to help keep growing our industry, spreading the word that there's even wine in Michigan is somewhat unknown, too.
Yeah, you know, how is the wine in Michigan? Because you guys, I think, probably suffer from a little prejudice. People drive by and think, yeah, it can't be that good.
We have excellent wines, honestly. It's we're very similar to, like, Northeast France, Burgundy and Alsace. Very nice aromatic whites. Semi-dry styles tend to be a focus in this area because that's what the clientele want.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some nice, serious, dry whites and reds, sparkling wines. You know, we're just a cool climate region. So, you know, it's unfair that we a lot of times get pitted against California, which is just a completely different monster, you know, as far as the climate.
Right.
And it just doesn't make the same wine. So ours are very food friendly. They don't tend to be such, you know, so high in alcohol. They have good acidity, so they pair well with most any cuisine.
So moving into this sort of sparkling drink area, though, this could be a chance for a real boom for you guys.
Yeah, we're really hoping. There's been enormous support already from our retailers clamoring for a regional product. So we're very excited that, you know, we've been able to, start this project and get it off the ground. It was very new to us. So it's been a lot of work. We use Kaleidoscope in Chicago was a big help to do the branding. And I think our packaging turned out just incredible on a national level. So we're set up in five states regionally, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio with these cans. And we think we're positioned really well to hit the ground running here. And, you know, I'm slightly nervous, but I also, we have capacity, so I think we're ready for it.
Are they on sale now, or if not, when did they go on sale?
Yeah, they've just really gone on sale in the last week or so. So they're just getting into your markets, into, Binney's, Meijer, your local liquor store can ask for them too, and should be able to get them now.
So this is like an author, right after an author releases her book, waiting for the reviews or waiting for the business to start, right? Or maybe a movie director.
Yeah, I'm literally on like a book tour, I feel like. You're not lying. You know, it's just, there's such fun and good products for this time of year. You know, we have this Peach Bellini that's, you know, a nice, lively, sparkling beverage that it's not too sweet. Our Crantini, which has been our classic drink at the Round Barn Estate, where we have live music every weekend all throughout the summer. We've brought that to the can. Our Sangria has never been in a package before. It's been 10 years, and we've sold thousands of gallons, and it's the first time people can really take it easily to go.
So when...
And then our Cherry Spritz is the last one that's made up, you know, from Michigan cherries, which we're the second largest cherry-producing state.
When will you know if it's worked?
When they try to reorder, hopefully. So as customers try it and tell their friends and we start seeing big orders, we'll know we've done it right. And so we're constantly looking for feedback and doing tastings and, you know, market research as we're going. So we're pretty nimble that we can change it.
Round Barn Winery, and, well, it's a local company, and people can help out by giving it a sample. Where do people find more information, Matt?
Roundbarn.com.
Matt Morse from the Round Barn Winery. Hey, listen, best of luck to you. Let's touch base a little bit later to see how you're doing.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for having us.
Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank, and we thank them for that. All right, let's go to Southern California. If you listen closely, you know that my daughter, Emma, just celebrated her one-year anniversary in L.A. She moved out. Her Independence Day was July 4th of last year, and one of the really cool things she's been doing is selling pictures at the some of her photos at the Melrose Trading Post in Southern California, in L.A., on Sundays. And here I'm reading Julia Zwick's column, The Essential California, Essential L.A., in the L.A. Times, and I see the Melrose Trading Post comes in. She joins us on a phone line now. Julia, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I love this story about social media influencers and how they've become like gnats. And finally, we're starting to swat back. Tell me about this guy, Joe Nitti, who sells ice cream at the Melrose Trading Post.
Absolutely. So Joe Nitti has a pretty popular ice cream truck in Los Angeles. He has a couple now. He sells, it's a really simple product. It's called CVT Twist, which is chocolate vanilla twist, sold out of vintage Mr. Saucy trucks. And in L.A., there's really been a move over the last couple of years for super Instagrammable food items.
Right.
And so this is kind of the opposite of that. And Joe started to get really frustrated because at least once a week, influencers or so-called influencers would kind of come up to his truck and ask for free stuff or email asking for free stuff. And he described it as them kind of saying, hey, what's up? So, you know, I have 100,000 followers. Can you hook me up with an ice cream cone? And he's like, this is a $4 product, you know.
Right. If you're going to sell your soul, buy something bigger.
Exactly. Right? And what's really, exactly, yeah, if you're going to sign the Fast Game Pact, get a whole ice cream truck, not a full cone. And what's really interesting is it used to be really commonplace for restaurants and food trucks to give so-called influencers free food, but there's now so many influencers and so many people calling themselves influencers, and it's become such a big business that a lot of restaurants have really started to push back and have made it a policy not to participate anymore.
And so Nisi, he created a little sign, right, that he put up in his truck that became
exactly
an Instagrammable photo.
That's the funny part. He made a sign. He kind of got that up and made a sign that said, influencers pay double.
Right.
And went and got it laminated and put it up in his truck before the Melrose Flea Market one Sunday. And then, of course, a picture of that went totally viral and kind of... Okay, go on.
No, I was going to say, so as I was saying earlier, my daughter's familiar with Joe's truck, and she says that he's also got a sign on the window that says free ice cream tomorrow that he puts up every day.
That sounds like him.
But he's,
what does your daughter sell there?
She works, you know, I don't know Charles's last name, but Charles is a photographer there, and Emma helps him set up his tent on Sundays, and then he puts some of her work up for sale as well. It's really a cool little thing.
Oh, that's wonderful. Congratulations to her.
Yeah, it's great. I'm very proud of her. But so this is, and when we were out in L.A., she took me by this restaurant. It was a big pink wall. And she said, yeah, this is an Instagram wall where people stand in front of the wall and they post their pictures. I know it's a cottage industry, right? Designing restaurants to create Instagrammable photos in the restaurant.
Exactly. And that's been a really interesting thing. The wall you're referring to is a Paul Smith store. And anytime you drive by, there's dozens of people kind of waiting to take a turn, taking a picture in front of it. And there's now a number of these Instagrammable walls around the city where businesses will really kind of cater to making their location a place where people want to geotag pictures so that people then come and hopefully spend money. But it's just kind of a really interesting... There's a lot of backlash against it, but it continues to also drive business.
Yeah, so we're kind of talking about two different things, aren't we? Because there are the influencers who, well, look, I mean, it's a legitimate thing, too. They're signing contracts with retailers and things like that. But so they're
it's a billion-dollar industry.
Yeah, it's the way in many cases, it's maybe the way we sell things or the way we buy things now. So there's that, but then there's also just this, the rest of us who are looking for an Instagrammable photo, and that's where we talk about restaurant design and things like that.
Absolutely, and thank you. That's a very important distinction to be making. And one thing also that's probably important to note is there are so many kind of high-level influencers who are having these really big deals with companies to endorse or even just post their products. And those could be, you know, up to $500,000 or $1 million for a post. And then the much kind of smaller people are probably just getting a free product or a couple $100.
It's kind of a cool thing. I mean, the positive side of it is nice because, you know, you really can build. It's another sort of American dream. You can build something from nothing and create quite a career out of it. The problem is all of us think we can do it, and so we're all trying.
Exactly.
Julia Zwick writes the column Essential California. Julia, I'm a fan of the column now. People should go just to read a piece you have up today about beach erosion in California. We don't have time to talk about it today, unfortunately, but it's a fascinating sort of problem. And one surprise, you know, we hear about mudslides, forest fires, all of that stuff. Who knew about the beach erosion issue in California? But that's a big problem as well. I hope we can talk again.
Likewise. Thank you so much. And please do, if you haven't already subscribed to the newsletter, just Google Essential California and LA Times, and you can sign up and get a daily digest of what's happening
in California. I'll do it in the next 10 minutes. Thanks, Julia.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a good one.
You too. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. If you're a Jim Beam bourbon fan, you might want to sit down for this. Last week, there was a very large fire at the Jim Beam facility in Kentucky, and sadly, it destroyed nearly 45,000 bottles of, quote, relatively young whiskey. Done. Kaput. No more. And what's even worse is that the whiskey spread into the Kentucky River, all 23 miles of it. The environmental governing body down there is working to limit any further damage to the environment. No official word yet from the maker to see if it will impact costs, but this surely will be felt later on. And your wallet might be seeing some damage after visiting the new Primark store coming to State Street. The Dublin-based retailer is a fast fashion outlet with competitors like H&M and Zara. It's going in the 45,000 square foot space that was the old Gap store. And it's the newest store of their 370 locations worldwide. And despite the costly real estate, the clothing and apparel will be real cheap. They get away with things for like under $40. That's like basically free. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Amy Guth is in the studio. Amy, this has been one of those days where producer Bennett Wakenight and engineers Jim Holland and Krista Flores, all you couldn't hear it or see it, but they've been running around here like bees in a hive.
I know. It's fascinating.
It was great because we just had a couple technical issues, and they handled it very professionally.
They make it look easy.
Unlike your host, and everything's cool.
Unlike us, and we just go, oh, God, what's happening?
NEM, NEM.
Okay. We just start freaking out in here.
So Amy's the host of The Daily Gist, this really cool business podcast that comes from Crane Chicago Business and WGN Radio. You should subscribe to that. And one of the stories I was reading in Crane's this week online has to do with Jim Belushi, who he's always looking, it seems like. And he's found now he's a marijuana gentleman farmer.
He is a gentleman farmer. Once it was legal in Oregon, he started a farm, the Belushi Farms, and he's expressed some ambition to go national with this. He talked exclusively to Cranes this week, and he's been talking about what his plan is and how he feels like Illinois is such a key spot for, you know, it's a big state, but also so many marijuana startups are here, Cresco right. Labs, and those guys, there's a lot of venture capital money around that. So he's looking to, you know, he's really thinking quite strategically about this brand. He said, if you walk into a dispensary once it's legal and you see the Blues Brothers brand, that's a 40-year-old
brand. Does
he
own the brand?
Apparently he does.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's going to incorporate that brand with this process. But he says, in all seriousness, I want to drive the Bluesmobile around, but instead of the PA system on top, he's going to put a giant
Bud
joint up there.
Right.
Which I think I need to see that.
He also said in the article that if his brother John were a pothead, he'd still be alive.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. He was talking and reflecting a lot about that, you know, that, hey, you know, my brother overdosed on drugs that can kill you. No one overdoses on this. This is different. I wish there was more conversation and thoughtful conversation about marijuana, and that's his feeling about it. And, you know, I think he feels like he's in part maybe doing this to carry on a legacy of his brother whose life was cut short because of heavy drugs.
Right.
And so it'll be really interesting.
And he's making
to see.
A buck.
He's making a buck.
Is he making a big buck? How do we know? Do we know?
It's unclear yet, but he's also going to start a reality show. He says that Live Nation has agreed to produce a reality show of him as this marijuana farmer and marijuana mogul. And so the DIY Network did a little something a few years ago.
Can I just say, when you said reality show, I pictured like three guys smoking on a couch.
Just sitting there, hey, man.
Right, eating Doritos. But no, there's more to it than that.
There's more to it. He's going to talk about the business end of it and farming and all of that, which will be interesting to see that. So there was, like I said, a short-lived version of that on the DIY Network, but I think it was a little too early for that because we're only the 11th state to legalize. So
well, and Belushi brings something to it. That,
absolutely.
You know, it's a name and a recognizable face and things like that.
For sure.
I know that the number, I was looking up some of the numbers earlier today. Colorado, since it's gone legal, has, I think, sold $8 billion in legal marijuana. Their tax revenue was up 8% year over year this past year. How is it doing in other states? Do you know?
You know, I'd have to look that up quickly because
right.
I don't want to give the wrong number.
Question,
right.
But
like, let me just pull those numbers out
right.
of my head, Bertrand. but, you know, I think it's all quite positive. The one detail that I thought was very funny is when Vegas started selling recreational marijuana, kind of a all cash business, no questions. I mean, they were making a lot of money, but I thought it was very funny that the state ran out of marijuana so quickly.
Really?
They just ran out really quickly.
It's an interesting thing, and I don't know if you know the answer to this too, but I've been talking with friends about how it will be grown. And, you know, I think it's probably not going to be a huge acreage sort of affair, right? We're talking about greenhouses for the most part. I don't
you know
the answer to that.
I know someone who worked in law enforcement for a very long time who was recruited to help design security for some of these.
Because you'd have to really work
right.
on that.
It's really, really a fascinating process. Also, an interesting nuance is the there's a gap time between when it is legal to bring the seeds in and, like, you have to grow it in advance before you can sell it, and you don't want a huge
right,
window,
right, right.
but at some point you can't even bring it in to start growing it until it's legal. So there's going to be a little lag time between, it's not like January 1st it's all for sale because you can't bring it in. So it's kind of interesting.
So, yeah, so that's
he's
a good
kind
point.
Of, right. He's kind of helping work through those transportation issues of even acquiring the seed and the everything that you need to grow that. But it sounds like they're very heavily guarded. There's a lot of security around the cultivation centers. But I think there's also a lot of chatter that I've started to see about Is this an opportunity to work with farmers who are maybe their kids don't want to take over the farm, to work with some people interested in a cultivation center?
And that's the thing. That's what I mean. I don't know how much acreage is really going to be involved in this. But all right, check that out. Then you're talking about that on the Daily Gist today, right?
Among many things, that was a topic this week. Also today, I talk with Beth Kirk-Malecki, who is from Mercer Chicago. She leads the Chicago office, about the Chicago Gender Equity Pledge and how she put that into play in her workspace and how other leaders can do the same. It was a really interesting conversation, very concrete steps to take.
We'll check it out. Amy Guth, thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much.